The 9 Years Podcast is brought to you in association with Freddie Flaxman. And welcome to the 9 Years Podcast. We make no apologies for the length of the intro track this week. We are still basking in reflected glory as, to paraphrase The Rock, finally, AFC Wimbledon has come back to winning football matches. I am Nick Draper, joined as always by the face of the BBC Sport website, Mr. Stuart Deakins, and we will be discussing the 2-0 win against Gillingham this week, before looking ahead to not only another meeting with Jules in the League Cup on Tuesday, but the long trip to Hartlepool on Saturday. We will be playing our new game, Jackson 5, in full this week as well. But as you've probably seen from the title of this episode, we first want to speak to our manager, Johnny Jackson, who we are delighted to welcome to the podcast for the first time. Johnny, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us today. How are you doing?
Yeah, really good, thanks. Really good.
Obviously very happy after the result on Saturday, I imagine.
Yeah, I was really pleased to get off to a good start. That was important, and obviously, you know, for the club as well, having not won for a while, I think it was doubly important, especially nice being at our place, you know, in front of our own fans, that we could send everyone away happy.
You said before the game about the long winless run at the end of last season, or second half of last season, and you said for you now it's a clean slate. We're starting from year zero, as it were. But did you still have any concerns Saturday morning that there might still be a bit of a hangover from it?
Yeah, I mean, you have your niggling doubts, obviously. I think like what I was really pleased with was the preparation. I said to the boys before the game that I felt calm, I felt relaxed because I knew that we was ready, and I knew that they was prepared. And we'd done, you know, we'd had a really good pre-season, we'd had a really good build-up of quality opposition, and I think we'd improve with every performance. So I felt like we was in a really good place going into it. However, you do then hope that the boys, once they cross the white line, you know, that they can handle the occasion and the pressure that comes with it. And I thought they'd done that brilliantly. So, yeah, I was almost certain that we was ready, but obviously there's always that niggling doubt that, you know, once your job as the manager and the coach is done during the week, it is sort of over to the players, and you just hope that they can sort of carry out what you're asking of them.
How did you find the atmosphere on Saturday? Because to be fair, the atmosphere felt very positive. Bear in mind that we haven't won this year. And on the run that we had and got relegation, how did you find that sort of? Because it felt to me like a very sort of positive atmosphere, and it was one of those like ready to go.
Yeah, I thought it was unbelievable, honestly. From the off, basically the way everyone got behind the team. I don't think if you had no idea of what had happened before last season and you were sat there watching that game, you would have said that this is a club that's really positive, really looking forward to the new season. And there was a real sort of positivity in the air. That's what I felt. And I felt that all during the game. I felt like in the tougher moments during the game that the crowd really got behind the team. And certainly down the stretch when we had a sort of 2-0 lead and it looked like that we was going to get over the line, you could really feel that everyone was fired up and they were so happy that was finally going to get to see a home win. So nothing but good things to say for the support and the way that everyone got behind the team, and the atmosphere at Plough Lane Saturday was brilliant.
I mean, aside from the result, obviously, and without commenting on individual performances, what one thing pleased you most about the performance? And conversely, what's the one thing you perhaps thought coming out of it afterwards you thought we could improve on?
Well, I'm always, I'm quite sort of, I can be picky, and, there was lots of moments that I felt like we could have moved the ball quicker, we could have recognised where the space was and perhaps been a bit more patient and switched it better. I thought we'd done it well, but I think we can do it better. I thought our shape was good, but I think it can be even better. Stuff like that. What pleased me the most, I'd say a couple of things really. I think our bravery under pressure to try and play, to be confident in what we was doing and really be brave in our playing out stuff. That really pleased me, because that was one of the, you do it in pre-season and you do it on the training pitch and it all looks great, but can you replicate it when you got 7,500 people there, and it's a bit of a pressure cooker? Can you replicate it? And I thought the boys did brilliantly, and also I thought it was a real professional performance, the way we saw the game out. I think after when we went 2-0 up, I think we snuffed them out of the game, to be honest. And I thought we were really, really sort of ruthless and professional in the way that we saw it out and didn't really give them a sniff after that. So that pleased me as well, because obviously having gone that long without winning, that a nervousness can creep in and an anxiety can creep in and then it can seep through the team and the crowd and stuff like that. And I never felt that. I felt like we was in control and there was a positivity around the place, and I felt like once we went 2-0 up that they was never going to get back into it.
Yeah, John, it's interesting actually, because at 2-0 I was probably open for a third, because when you haven't won a game for so long, you're sort of like, you don't want to be too hopeful. I thought we killed the clock really comfortably. But what I would say, as much as impressed as I was with us on Saturday, it was nothing on the women for England that lost. I don't know if you watched the game, but they killed the game out. I've never seen professionalism. I'm sure we could learn from that, surely. They killed that game, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They managed it brilliantly. They kept the ball. And, when you've got it, the opposition can't score. And then when you've got to get the ball into the right areas, and then if you get opportunities to snuff it out far away from your goal or make fouls or whatever you've got to do to sort of break up their attacks, then you need to do that as well. But the best way to do it is obviously to have possession of the football, which is what the girls done great. And I thought we done it brilliantly in the last sort of 20 minutes of that game on Saturday. Yeah. And it really sort of, it deflates the opposition. If they can't get the ball back, and you don't have to be in any hurry to attack. You have to almost wait for them to come onto you, and then hopefully you can pick them off. Like you say, I wanted a third, because you always think of what ifs and what if they get a lucky one and they're back in it. But I think, in my opinion, if you was a neutral watching that game, you would have said after we got the second that we was comfortable, and they didn't look like getting back into it. That's the way I saw it. But obviously, when you're in it and you're immersed in it, you never quite feel that comfortable till sort of the third or fourth goes in, really. But I think it was as comfy a 2-0 as you're going to get, really.
There was just one other question I had about Saturday, which was substitutions. Obviously, we've got new rules now, but we're allowed to make 5 changes, but you didn't make any changes until really, really late in the game. Was that something that you were anticipating doing beforehand, or was it just you thought we were playing well, we were comfortable, like you say, so you didn't want to disrupt the team? What was your thinking?
Yeah, well, you always have your what ifs. So we always go through the scenarios on a Friday. Go through the team if so and so gets injured. What will we do if it's in this minute? If it's in that minute, So you always have your contingencies, if you like. And then obviously you have to watch what unfolds on the pitch and make decisions based on that as well. And I just felt that we was really comfortable in the game. I felt like we looked fit and strong. So I didn't feel, sometimes, you know, you look at the clock and you think, right, you know, it's 70 minutes. That's time to make subs. But sometimes the best decision is not to do anything. And I really felt that we were strong in the game. I felt the boys looked fit. It was only when I did make the changes that I felt a couple started to look a little bit weary. But before that, yeah, I mean, you don't, just because you can make five subs now doesn't mean that you have to. There'll be other times, you know, where you need to make changes to affect the game, or people look jaded and you need to freshen it up. But, you know, we looked at it. We it was a constant discussion during the second half. You know, how can we improve? We are the strongest 11 at the moment on the pitch. You know, who's going to improve it and stuff like that. And I just felt comfortable in the game, and I felt my boys looked strong. So I didn't feel the need to make changes any sooner than I did.
So talking about freshness and what have you, we've had a week off now. We're now up to Hartlepool on Saturday. Long, long away trip. As a player, how were you with the long away trips and the hotel stays? Did you like them? Did you enjoy them? Or were they a bit of a tough one for you?
No, I enjoyed overnight. I mean, the journey to Hartlepool is a bit of a stinker, I won't lie. It's a long way up there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I probably didn't enjoy it. That side of it, but I did enjoy the overnight. It's like sort of second half of my career, if you like. I had young kids. You never quite sleep as well as the same ever again. I don't know if you guys have got kids, but if you have, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I liked the overnight, as you know, you undisturbed sleep. You can get your head down early, really get some good rest in. And I just like being around the lads as well. You know, I found it, you know, a good thing leading into a game that you sort of, yeah, dinner together, you're around each other. And and I still enjoy it now with my staff as well. You know, it's a good chance for us to bond and spend some quality time together, talk about the what ifs for the following day. So I've always enjoyed them.
Have you been to Hartlepool before? Have you played at Hartlepool or managed at Hartlepool before?
Both, yeah. I played there a few times in my career, and I managed there last season. Yeah, we drew them in the what's it called now? Johnson's Paint, is it? What's it called?
Papa John's.
Papa John's. Yeah, we drew them in the quarterfinals of the Papa John's. So I don't really want to tell you how it went, but. we didn't make it to the semis, but we lost on penalties actually. So sort of mixed emotions of journeys to Hartlepool.
I say that because we've been a couple of times and it's freezing up now. It's obviously on the North Sea, isn't it? It's
absolutely freezing. I think we've found a good spot to plan in, to be honest. rather plan now than maybe in January.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. What about when you're going up then? So how are we travelling up? The team travelling up on the Friday? Is it that how we're doing it?
We travel up tomorrow, yeah. So we'll train. We'll train at the training ground and then we'll travel up after, yeah.
Cool. And what about yourself? Like, I know you said you like the away trip to boys and things like that. On a normal Saturday, however, come the end of for instance, on Saturday, how do you sort of relax after a game? Sort of preparation. What sort of things do you do to sort of get a bit of downtime?
I normally just go for a bit of dinner, really, with my wife. And if my kids have come to the game, then, yeah, we'll just go and grab a bite to eat. Maybe have a couple of drinks if it's gone well. And just relax that way, really. I just spend the time with the family. You know, my wife, and she pretty much comes to all the games. My kids, certainly my boy, he likes to come to all the games. So we'll just head back towards home and have some food together, a couple of drinks, and like I say, if it's gone well, and then just sort of relax that way, really.
Do you find it easy to switch off? Are you a football mad person, or are you, you know, for our sake, were you watching, and I have to say, it's Aaron Paul was on the ITV highlights being nutmegged by an old fella on Saturday, which I've got a reminder about. Are you one that's easy to switch off, or are you always constantly thinking?
Yeah, no, I find it difficult to switch off, certainly in and around the games. I find that quite difficult. If we've lost, I don't really want to watch any football. I'll watch our game back, but I don't really, you know, I wouldn't want to then watch the highlights of every other game. I've got the ump too much, really, to do that. But if we've won, yeah, I'm probably in a better mood and I want to see as much football as I can. But then, you know, come the Sunday, you'll sort of either be watching the game back that we've just played or perhaps watching, you know, the next opposition, and then there'll be Premier League games on the Sunday, which no doubt I'll watch as well. So I find myself watching a lot of football. I mean, I've been to two games this week as well, just to, you know, just get you out there watching different levels, different players. So you just find yourself just completely immersed in it, really. Whether that's good or bad, I'm not so sure. Sometimes, you know, some people will tell you need to switch off from it. Some people will tell you you've got to be obsessed. I don't think there's necessarily a right or wrong way. It's just what works for you. But, you know, I find myself sort of fully immersed in it, really.
I know you're saying, obviously, you've been some games and, obviously, you know, the window's still open, isn't it, at the moment? I was listening to the Derek Anthony podcast this morning, actually, on the way to work, and he was talking about the market still a little bit in terms of not great at the moment. And it was interesting when he was saying, like, you know, the demand for players in June was quite extortionate, and then, obviously, July becomes a bit less, and August becomes... In terms of, I know you, from what I sense, you're not really a person that panics. You know, you're patient, that sort of side of it. Is that where you are now? It's a long window. Is it, you know, it's still a month till the window finishes. And it feels like, in a way, it's going to be like a quick fire sale, in a sense. Are you sort of just sitting around waiting?
Yeah, I mean, well, we're constantly looking. We're constantly speaking about if and where we need to improve. And then the types of players that, or the ones that might be available or become available that might help us. So we're looking at it, but you're right, as in I have been patient. I don't think I've panicked at any stage, and I think that's paid off in the business that we have done. Really pleased with the lads that we've brought in. You know, could have gone out there and just got numbers in for the sake of it at the start. We actually came back first day of pre-season and we didn't have one single new face in the building because Alex Pearce was still on his honeymoon and he was my only signing at the time. So I was coming back to obviously a new group to me, but to the lads, no new faces. And that could have easily been sort of a bit of a panic stations. But I knew that if we waited and we was patient, then players would become available. And like you say, at the start of June, a player's got a certain value, or what he thinks is a certain value. And then come July, it's probably a little bit less. Come August, it's a little bit less. And August the 31st, it could even be less than that. So there will be players that, and also you'll have players that have been part of their team's pre-seasons and their build-ups. But sort of as the season starts, you find that teams are leaving players out of teams and squads and stuff like that. And then sort of more opportunities for the players becoming available, either, you know, sort of free transfers or loans coming up that perhaps at the start of the window weren't there. That will happen over the next couple of weeks as well. So Dara's right. And there will be deals to be had. Well, I mean, Weber will be involved in any of that, but you know, you see it every year. There will be, the last couple of days go mad, don't you? And you all think, why does it have to wait till that last minute? But it's for that reason, because clubs ask for a certain amount at the start of a window, players ask for a certain amount, but that amount changes drastically, or can change drastically, you know, the later the window goes, and obviously the buying clubs, or they know that. And it all becomes a little bit of a game as everyone tries to get the best deal possible for their end, really. So as frustrating as that can be, I get it. You know, I've been involved in it now. I've seen it and I know how it works. And if you can hold your nerve and be willing to miss out on a couple, then you can sometimes reap the rewards later. Some, you know, you're not, and you're not going to get everything right. Sometimes you are going to miss out on stuff. But yeah, I'm happy with how we've done it. Again, I won't panic. I won't just bring in players ever for the sake of it. They have to be the right ones. They have to be for the right positions, the right reasons, and they got to be the right characters. I say that all the time. I'm sure you've heard me say it. That they have to fit into what we're doing, both technically and, you know, with their attitude as well.
John, we really appreciate your time. We've got 15 quick fire questions to go through with you, if that's all right.
Yeah, that's right.
Just quick before we do those, though, I was just going to ask. So, did you say you've got two kids?
I've got a boy and a girl. My daughter's 12 and my son's 9.
Okay. And are they looking at perhaps following your footsteps with a career in football? Or is it too early?
My daughter's not got much interest in it. certainly not playing it. She comes to watch sometimes. But my boy, yeah, he loves it. He loves it. I think he'd like nothing more than to become a player himself. So I'm going to try and help him along that path.
Nice. Got him Wimbledon top yet?
I have, yeah. Nice. Yeah, he loves it.
What's your favourite, by the way, Johnny? The blue or the blue?
Well, I'll get my head around that one. I've actually got the don't tell the kit man, but I managed to sneak one of the away ones out with me the other day, so keep that under wraps in case Rocket's listening. I think he knows anyway, but
yeah.
He won't say anything, don't worry. Okay, so some quick fire questions then, just the first answer comes to your head. The first one is, in your career, the best player you played with?
Robbie King.
Okay. Toughest opponent?
Henry.
Okay, fair enough. The best stadium you've played at?
White Hart Lane.
Okay. The old one. The old one, obviously.
Yeah.
Had proper character, didn't it, the old one?
It did. Proper stadium.
Great ground.
The worst dressing room you've been in? In terms of facilities, I mean. I'm not prying in other regards.
Cool. I've been in some stinkers, but it's hard to remember. But Aki away last year was a bit of a stinker,
right?
To be honest. Yeah,
we can imagine. And then your favourite moment in football so far?
Favourite moment in football? Captain in Charlton to League One title.
Okay, and then these ones are just either-or questions, so it's the first of the two options that comes into your head. So we'll start with Johnny Cash or Johnny Rotten?
Johnny Cash.
VAR, yes or no?
No.
Five subs, yes or no?
I voted for it, so I've got to say yes, I suppose.
I guess you kind of guessed it. Cockerel or Robin?
Robin.
Would you rather fight one kangaroo or eight penguins?
Eight penguins.
Mm, same. Michael Jackson or Sonia Jackson?
Oh, God.
What a choice.
I know, yeah. Michael Jackson.
Were Ross and Rachel on a break?
Yes.
Are there too many weather forecasts on TV, yes or no?
No, I like a weather update.
If they were to swap jobs, would Cliff Thorburn be a better television presenter than Sue Cook? Or would Sue Cook be a better snooker player than Cliff Thorburn?
Cliff Thorburn would be a better presenter.
Although he is technically a snooker player, but anyway. And then finally, last question. When you're making a cup of tea, do you put the bag in the mug first or do you put the milk in the mug first? Be very careful with this one.
Bag, obviously.
Obviously, of course. Johnny, thank you very much for taking the time. Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for taking it. And yeah, obviously, we just wish you all the best for the rest of the season and beyond. And look forward to it. It's a big week, isn't it? So Hartlepool, then Gillingham, and then who do we have then? Yeah. Doncaster after that. So yeah, busy time.
Yeah, busy August, yeah, really busy.
Cool.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us. Cheers. Appreciate it.
Take care.
See you later. Star. Thank you so much.
Bye.
A Okay, Stu, that music is the sound of the start of a new feature on the podcast, which we are calling On That Side of It, in which we speak for 3 minutes on a subject. It could be football related, general. It could be Wimbledon related, it could be general football world related, it could be anything related. So this week we're obviously going to talk about women's football, but we only have until the music stops. So women's football obviously is a big topic of conversation this week because the England women won the European Championships, beat Germany after extra time at Wembley, and it has caused quite a bit of conversation over the last few days. But I mean, there are wider aspects to this which will relate to AFC Wimbledon in a moment. But I mean, you spoke about it briefly with Johnny just now, but about the management of the game, how they saw it out. But they did do really well, purely on taking the final game in isolation. I thought Germany across the game, over the whole, were actually technically better. I thought they created the better chances in the game. They hit the post. Keeper, I thought the England keeper had a great game. But I thought it was a victory for resilience in the end and seeing it out and then managing the game.
Yeah, I think through the tournament, the subs have been quite important and they were used again quite well, you know, in terms of, I think it's really, you can tell that squad's got a togetherness. And let's not underestimate how challenging that must be to have a final at Wembley in front of a record crowd. And yet you can't, you know, thinking that they had that sort of crowd before, you know, they probably haven't. So, you know, I think you have to think they had a lot of expectation. You know, if you look at the media, lots of expectation in them to win that, and Germany, right, they're technically better, but England just you know, stayed in the game, and a stab and a corner and a stab in, and then the celebrations that you will see time and time again.
Spent so long introducing this feature, we've only got a minute left, but to relate it to AFC Wimbledon and an upsurge we're expecting in interest in the women's game, especially over the coming months. Wimbledon moving, perhaps you've called perhaps for more of the women's games to be played at Plough Lane.
Yeah, there's going to be a buzz around this. You know, you've got young girls who want to play football, want to watch football. I think it's a different game in terms of, I think the crowds will be more family orientated. So I think the club need to get around that. But there's a market there, and if we don't, you know, if we don't get on top of it, we're missing an opportunity, you know, to get, because people come to Plough Lane will love the experience. If they come for the women's games, they might come for the men, but we have to get on top of it, and let's hope we do.
Yeah, and one of the difficulties I think we will find is playing on the same weekend, Saturday, Sunday sometimes. There is overlap between men's and women's football, but that I think will be the biggest challenge, getting people to watch both teams, because, you know, people are busy, they have busy lives, they can't really afford the time for both. But anyway, that is pretty much our time, Stu. So thank you very much for our new feature, On That Side of It. We'll do the same again next week. What the topic will be, who knows? Right, Jackson 5. This is the new game.
Love it.
So I'm not sure how best to do this, but I thought, as it's just you answering the questions this week, we can do it one by one, as opposed to you answering all the questions and then we marking it afterwards. So simply put, it's five questions on a theme. This week's theme, because we are playing Gillingham in this competition on Tuesday, this week's theme is the League Cup. So five questions about Wimbledon and the League Cup. Question one. You see, the great thing about this game, Stu, is people can play along at home.
Right. We're probably better than I am, but I am.
Testing. Well, let us know how you get on, listeners. At 9YRS Podcast on Twitter, tell us how you fared, what you got out of five. Stu, question one. Our first League Cup match post-Reformation was a 3-2 defeat at Crawley Town in 2011. It was a preliminary round game.
Right. The first time it was a preliminary round.
Second time, because Bristol Rovers and Boston United had to do this before we did, would you believe it? Yes, but I don't think it's been done since. Anyway, who scored the winner for Crawley that day?
Oh, I'm thinking back to that time. Might be what, Matt Tubbs might have been there. I'm going to keep Matt Tubbs.
Is that your final answer?
I'm afraid so.
Yeah, well, you're one out of one. There you go. Good start.
There we are.
Matt Tubbs. He would later score for us in the League Cup against Milton Keynes.
Cool.
In 2018, we won a League Cup game for the first time since the year 2000. Who did we beat?
Sorry, say it again. I was just bugging around my camera. Sorry.
That's all right. We'll come back to your camera at the end of the game, actually. In 2018, we won a League Cup game for the first time since the year 2000. Who did we beat?
Wow. 2018, so that would have been League One. Northampton.
Cobblers. No, it was Portsmouth. We won 2-1 at Fratton Park.
Oh, we did midweek, wasn't it?
Well, they're always midweek, but yes. Yes.
Piggott, I think, if I remember properly.
Say again?
Piggott scored, if I remember properly.
I thought Piggott had scored, but I'm not sure it was again in that game. An own goal winner, and I think Scott Wagstaff scored the equaliser.
An own goal winner?
It was an own goal winner.
I don't think they want to claim the own goal winner.
Well, no, I think that's what it went down as, but hey.
An own goal defeat, I think, probably more for them.
Well, true, yes, fair point, fair. Question three. In 1999, we reached the semi-final of the competition for the second time. Who was the sponsor of the competition that year?
Ooh, Coca-Cola.
Is that your final answer?
I'm trying to think of who sponsored them. Yeah, Coca-Cola.
It was Worthington's that year, would you believe? I think it was the first year of Worthington's.
I would have...
No.
What are Worthington's? What are they?
It's a beer, isn't it?
Yeah, well, close. It was a drink, wasn't it?
It was a drink. I think it was Coca-Cola when we got beaten by Leicester on away goals. And then Spurs was Worthington's, but yeah. Question four. So you're one out of three so far. Question four. Our biggest single game victory. So because in the old days you used to have two-legged games. So I'm not adding up. I'm not doing an aggregate score. I'm saying across a 90 minutes, our biggest victory in the League Cup in history was a 5-1 win in 1997 against whom?
Sure, a random guess. I'm going to go for Hartlepool.
That is a random guess. And it'd be great if it was right, but it's not. It's Millwall. We beat Millwall 5-1 at Selhurst Park. Stuart Castledine scored.
Sure, I actually remember that Millwall game because I remember going to the Den.
Yes.
And some interesting songs from Millwall fans that raised some interesting responses from Wimbledon fans.
Mm. I mean, I think we won that second leg 4-1, thereby winning on aggregate 9-2. So we really did hammer them. There you go. And then finally on question five, right? Okay. You have to get both of these answers to get the point. Since 2011, three players have scored two times in this competition for us. But what I mean by that is, not in one game, not in one season, if you were to look at all the players that have scored for us in the League Cup since 2011, three individuals have scored two. All right? No one scored more than two. All right? One of these players is Joe Piggott.
Damn.
Can you name the other two?
Lyle Taylor.
No.
You're joking me. That was my go-to person.
I don't think he scored at all in the League Cup for us.
Yeah, obviously didn't have a cup bonus.
Well, no, he might have done it at Peterborough, maybe. He did at Peterborough, sorry. He did score one, yeah.
I confirm one.
Sorry. No, I'm going to tell Tom. You. You're going to keep... How many guesses do you...
as many of the players I can remember. Aziz.
Well, I'll tell you what. This is a bit of a trick question, Stu, because the first person that has officially listed as our joint top scorer in the League Cup since 2011 is own goal, right? The other one, the other player, Luke Moore, he scored against Crawley in that first preliminary round game and also against Millwall, I believe.
No one else, that's ridiculous, isn't it?
No one else has scored more than that, no. So there you go.
That's crazy. Great. Well, Stu, I've got the first one, right?
You've got one. So that's you don't want to start too well. You want to give yourself something to aim for. So one out of five is good. let us know how you did, listeners.
Yeah, and be honest.
Yeah. Oh, well, obviously. I mean, I could go on there and say I've got five out of five. I wrote the bloody question.
Exactly.
Two things, what was I going to say about that? First thing coming out of that was, if you're wondering, listeners, Stu, we're recording on Zoom, and Stu's got this new feature on Zoom, which means his camera keeps zooming in and out. That's what he was fixing a moment ago, and it does give you some form of motion sickness. But because when we were speaking to Johnny Jackson, I think maybe because Johnny was on the screen, so I hadn't noticed it before. But yeah, it's like being on a boat.
We have it at work on the big screen, and it's great because when I was talking, it then goes to them. And I deliberately go to the other side of the room just so it spins all the way around because I'm a child like that. But yeah, I've got a new button that I'm playing with, and yeah, it's not too clever, is it, really?
Oh, it's all good fun, as was our game. Whatever the other second thing I was going to mention, SG, I completely forgot, it's gone out of my head. Disappeared out of my head quicker than Liam Trotter disappears out of a tackle. Do you know what, Joe Piggott, sorry, he did score against Portsmouth, you are right. That was his second goal. His other one was against West Ham.
So yeah, I just remember playing in a yellow kit, and I just remember for some reason we scored in front of the away fans. I think just because we don't really do well against Pompey, so I think that's how I remember it. Mm-hmm. But of course, he may be scoring more times at Fratton Park, but not in a yellow shirt.
No, he did. He got a few assists on Saturday for Portsmouth at Sheffield Wednesday, playing right wing. By the looks of it, he wasn't, but according to the highlights, he was. So well done, Joe. Right. Hartlepool then, Stu, on Saturday. We won't talk about the League Cup for the moment. Hartlepool are first. We go up north on Saturday to a team that lost on the opening day 4-0 at a long trip to Poland, lost at Warsaw, got hammered. Last season, they finished 17th in League Two, and they are predicted to struggle this season. 442 magazine has predicted they will finish second bottom. The Not the Top 20 podcast has them in 21st. Manager Paul Hartley of Hartlepool, formerly of Celtic, of course, had success in Scotland. He's been very successful as a manager in Scotland with Alloa and Dundee, and his last job, Cove Rangers, got two promotions in three seasons. But this is his first job in England. And they've had a high turnover of players, four new recruits from Scotland. They've brought about 10 or 11 new players, actually. Omar Bogle and Luke Molyneux have left alongside many others, and they're big losses, I think it's fair to say. Yeah. They've got high hopes for Joe Gray, 19-year-old winger. Fast, tricky. The Hartlepool fans speak highly of him. But it's a game that, given our respective results on opening day, we'd go in as favourites, but it's a tough place to go, Victoria Ground.
Oh, yeah, but as we were saying to Johnny, obviously we didn't realise that he unfortunately got beat there.
Because that competition didn't count, but I didn't want to say that because he sounds like he was disappointed about losing the semi-final.
Well, yeah, and also it would have been cold at the time, wouldn't it? And, you know, it's summer, so it's not exactly going to be baking hot there, but it's going to be a bit warmer than what it normally would be. I'm not surprised we're going as favourites. Hey, look, it's difficult. At the moment, it's very difficult to judge games. You can only go on, we won 2-0 against Gingham, ex-League One club, and Walsall got beat. We don't. It's difficult that you don't know the strength of Walsall and you don't really know the strength of Hartlepool. One result, but I think from our point of view, we'll be going there quite positive. And for Hartlepool, they're probably also going to get their first win on the board, isn't it? So record wise, I'm not great there, are we? It's one of those weird grounds. Yeah, it feels like it's a ground that doesn't really like you winning there. And I know it sounds, you know, some grounds you just think, things don't see how we're going to win it. It's cold, it's horrible. Nothing is Hartlepool, but hey, look, do you know what? If we go there, I saw really funny today. There's some Twitter we follow, and it's got a slide of the unbeaten teams in the league still in the EFL, which I thought was hilarious. We're on it still.
Yeah, so after one game.
My link is, let's stay unbeaten and stay on that board as long as we can.
Yes.
I did. It's like doing a league table after one game, you don't do it. But after last season, I would take any positive of running, winning runs, etc.
The new EFL highlight show featuring Aaron Paul, as you mentioned earlier, on ITV. Yeah, they did do the league table. And I just, for every division, and I was thinking, you still had, the championship still had about three more games to go at that point. I was like, why do people do this? So when I read my newspapers on Sunday, I was delighted to see they hadn't published any league tables, because it would be silly. It would be silly. But anyway, score prediction for Hartlepool?
I feel like we're going to win by 1-0.
I am not sure, because it's a hard place to go. But as Johnny said, it's a good time of year to play them. If we were playing this game in December, I might think we'd be in for a real problem, but nice. But then first home game, they'll want a reaction. They will want a reaction. So maybe they'll just keep it tight and nick a draw. We'll see. But there we go. Elsewhere in League Two, Stu, I don't know if you had a chance to look at the fixtures. The game that I looked at was Crewe versus Harrogate Town, because it is the only battle in the division on Saturday between two teams that won on the opening day. So, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what? I haven't looked. I'll be sure if I haven't looked. And do you know what? I got a cold realisation that we got relegated on Saturday when I went onto my Sky Sports app and my followed league was League One.
Yeah.
That's something. That was quite... I don't know how to change it, so I'm just giving it as League One. But little things like that when you realise you've got relegated. And I don't know if you... I don't know about you, but I still keep looking at League One for lots of things.
Yeah, it's just instinctive, yeah.
Isn't it? So the quicker we get that sorted out, the better.
Last week, as we said, we mentioned that Crewe and Harrogate both won their games. We've mentioned that Hartlepool were the biggest losers on opening day, and I think in the whole of the Football League at Warsaw. Otherwise, highlight for me from last week in the division was, I don't know if you saw this, Stu, Leighton Orient second goal, Tom James volley. Yeah, because I think I was listening to, it might have even been the Not the Top 20 podcast, and they said, well, League Two, and we're starting with a goal of the season winner already on opening day. And I was thinking Chislett's goal was good, but it wasn't that good. But no, it was Tom James with that volley. And the low light obviously was Lee Tomlin of Doncaster Rovers with the most hilarious sending off you've ever seen.
Absolute stupidity, isn't it? And yeah, do you know what? It was in Leighton Orient, right? I think all girls could have good at Leighton Orient because they have the small back of the net, don't they? Do you know what I mean? I don't have a big... It feels like every goal hits the back at well. Yeah, that sounds stupid. Every goal hits the back of the net. But if you know what I mean, like it hits the net quicker because it's closer. Yeah. If you know that sort of side of it. But yeah, it's cracking stride. Do you know what's my like for me? Stevenage winning at Tranmere. Because Stevenage, if you look at the size of Stevenage, when I was saying to you pre-season, Stevenage have built a really big side. They are going to be horrible to play against. And also, I actually thought Jake Rees retired. He hasn't.
No.
He still plays for Stevenage. He's going to be playing under Steve Evans. I wonder how he enjoyed that. But that'd be, you know, I was thinking it'd be great to see Jake Reeves back at player name, but obviously at player name on that side of it. But Stevenage look a big, ugly team. Yeah, they're going to do well.
Jake Reeves didn't half look like he was enjoying life on Saturday when he saw him. He seemed to be enjoying scoring a goal and making assists. So, big fans of Jake Reeves on the podcast we are, so we wish him well. Just a final word. The final word on the lead to action actually is going to be, I just wanted to get possibly our future Prime Minister, Liz Truss. I just want to get her views on Lee Tomlin's actions on the weekend. What did Liz think?
That is a disgrace.
There we go. We'll do that every week. She can have her say on that every single week. Anyway, that brings us to an end to the show this week. Thank you very much for listening. Updates from Hartlepool and Gillingham in the League Cup will be available on Twitter at 9Wires Podcast. 9Years TV will be live before the game with Gillingham as well on YouTube and Facebook. But all that's left to say is a few thank yous. First of all, thank you to Freddie Flaxman for helping us out, assisting with equipment for the 9Years TV show. Generously.
Thank you, Freddie.
Huge thank you for that, Freddie. Big thank you to Johnny Jackson for taking time to speak to us. Much, much appreciated. I'm sure we'll speak to you again in the near future. And then finally, Stu, thank you very much for joining me.
No, it's been good. It's good to get back on the podcast. Good to have a win. Yeah, now I'm going to be greedy and I want another one.
Yes, and a big thank you because he's waited all the way to the very end of the podcast to get his name checked. Jack Curry, fantastic debut. He's going to be one hell of a player. And thank you also, Shay Alexander, for not defending.
Do you know what? Very quickly, Jack Curry has set a standard. And I know that sounds really harsh, but he's set a hell of a standard for performances on Saturday. He's done that pre-season. Hasn't surprised me how he played. And I'm pleased we got him under a couple of years of contract because he's going to attract people very quickly.
That's it. Thank you very much for listening. Alexa Bliss, bag first, milk last. 2 + 2 = 4. We will speak to you again next Friday.